Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale, of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan! That is a wonderful shot.
Why, thank you, John. We like to sink old Charles Darwin and the HMS Beagle down to the muddy depths. I am Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski, welcoming you to another fun-filled episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take a lighthearted look at the serious issues of where we all came from, creation, evolution, and all of those kinds of things. Big Bang, a big kerplunk, a big kablooey, whatever it was that got us here. We like to look at science and scripture and take a couple of pot shots at old Charles.
Yep, we want to put our finger on the button, so to speak, and launch that torpedo into the belly. And, you know, to have put a finger on the button, Stan,
yes,
you have to have the finger connected to the palm, and the palm connected to the wrist, and the wrist connected to the
arm bones.
It's the hand.
We're going to talk about the hand. Give ourselves a hand. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
all right.
Those are useful, aren't they?
Well, what happened is one of the things that actually becomes a conundrum in evolution, Stan, is a new book that's come out trying to explain. They call the scientific terminology used by evolutionary biologists is novelty.
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 Okay, what's
novelty? Is basically their word for what other scientists maybe want to call
the irreducible
miracle. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, or irreducible complexity. In other words, how can things, you know, Darwin proposed that everything evolves over slight successive modifications.
Right,
they
exactly.
They have the basics going down.
Yeah, he even said if you can disprove that, then his theory falls apart. But anyway.
And so scientists are trying to shore up some of this attack. And really, that's the plausibility of life,
attack,
which was put out by Gerhardt and Krishner. Their evolutionary thing, the plausibility of life, is trying to an
plausibility
attempt to answer
of life, a book.
They're trying to answer basically Michael Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box.
Yes.
Irreducible complexity, though they want to claim it's just creationism in disguise, they really are discovering that, you know, we don't explain these things very well. And the reason why is there's no explanation.
Well, they give it a shot.
They give it a shot. And their book called The Plausibility of Life is trying to, they have a new theory now. To help Darwinism or neo-Darwinism along, it's called the facilitated variation.
Facilitated variation. Facilitated, now, that sounds like somebody's behind facilitating.
Well, no.
They don't mean that.
It's called information that the first cells that reproduced passed along to other cells and other forms of life.
Okay.
So that they can still, they kind of come into existence with a suitcase full of stuff that they can maybe use to help fix and attach other things that may come along.
So in other words, it's not necessarily true that they're saying that the human being, all the DNA for a human was in that first cell, but the mechanism to
sprout it or help it along. They sort of discovered this by saying you can take, and they wanted to fix the embryonic arguments because they try to go back to Haeckel's embryos and that doesn't work. Yep. Then they try to do some experimentation. You know, it's always interesting that they use intelligent designers monkeying with stuff that's already here and then want to claim that that's how it might have happened in evolution.
With random chance.
With random chance. What they've done is they take a little bit of a, let's say you have a little chicken embryo, and what they'll do is they'll attach a little extra wing to it.
Okay.
Onto the embryo.
Okay.
And what happens in the embryonic level, what will happen is the chick embryo that's already developing will start sending out nerve cells to try to, which will grow into that, and it kind of tries to discover what it is.
Ah.
So in other words, in their theory, they would say it this way. Well, you have a little cell there, and all of a sudden, mutation causes a bump of maybe a small bone to be sticking out toward the end.
Uh-oh, how did I get there?
And so the nerve's going to send out exploratory stuff.
Okay.
Cells or lines or fingers or whatever. Exploratory.
Wire.
I guess wire. Oh, we found something over here. Hey, guys, check it out. You know, I don't know what they do, but nerves talking to nerves, all the cells.
Hey, well, what this thing is doing here,
we'll see if we can use it.
What can it do anything? Is that basically it?
That's basically what it is. Oh. And so they think that, and of course, it doesn't seem to really work, but they want to say, well, that's how it probably could have happened. And the trouble is, they start at the embryonic level.
Okay.
And there's a reason why.
All right.
It says, you know, the trouble is that everything about evolution, when you get to the bacteria-like life forms, everything from then on is sheer conjecture.
Okay, from one cell on up?
Everything is sheer conjecture. Okay. You know, they can see that there's a lot that remains unexplained. That is probably the understatement of their book.
Yeah. There's a lot that remains unexplained. In other words, from single cell to multi-cell, for instance?
Yes.
Okay.
Single cell to multi-cell.
They can't explain.
How does one cell communicate with another when they don't even know the other thing exists?
Okay. You know, all right. All right.
And you know, the development of a nucleus, all this stuff. You know, the origin of limbs, all this stuff. They purport that facilitated variation, the main point, makes it easy, they said, for an organism to evolve.
Okay. Makes it easy.
So if you want that first little cell somewhere, you know, it was feeling like, you know, these walls are kind of cramped.
Yes.
I wish I could just reach out and touch another cell.
Ah.
I want to
grow a hand. I want to grow a hand.
You know, you can watch, you can do an evolutionary play. You said you were going to work on one.
Well, yeah, you know, I see in my creative moments, which of course are many and thick.
this get ready, it's coming thick and fast, I'm afraid.
I can see someday a musical. It would be called Darwin's Beatles, because Darwin made much out of the slight variations. He was a beetle watcher in England, and he observed the beetles on the Galapagos Island, and he saw this and that and the other. And, well, I'm taking the E out of the second place there and putting an A in. And put the John Paul, Ringo, George type Beatles in there. And create a musical that has these kinds of word variations, like I want to grow, or I need to grow a hand, or
I need to grow a hand,
or help. You say you believe in evolution, you know, and stuff
you say
like that.
You want an evolution? Well, yeah. You know, we're going to change.
Yeah,
the cell. You can do all kinds of stuff there.
Oh, there are so many things.
Everybody's got something to hide except for me and my monkey, who's evolving. I don't know.
There are lots of cool things that one could do, but anyway, I digress, which is not unusual here.
Well, we digress well. But anyway,
facilitated, huh?
Yeah, easy evolution.
Easy evolution.
The trouble
easy.
Is, it's way too easy. The authors compare the exploratory behavior in an embryo to sort of the random variations in a species. And they compare the stabilization, you know, when it goes in by the target. In other words, that bone or that piece of flesh that's out
yeah,
there
that
kind
little
of.
Bump, right?
That's sending signals back. You
oh,
know?
It is.
That's because they have
I'm
to communicate.
Out here. Yes.
They have to send signals back, and they want to equate that with natural selection. But variation and selection in the laboratory, on the farm, or in the wild have never been observed. That's one of their problems. It's never been observed. The analogy between variation and exploratory behavior, between selection and the ability, in other words, for the target area, the bone of the thing, to send back the signal.
Right.
Just has never been observed. It's just almost like impossible.
Well, see, just a reminder on that, John. Remember that science is built supposedly on empiricism, i.e., observation of nature. And when we see supposedly scientific theories being developed that are not based on observation at all, in fact, if anything, when you can't see it observed, you might even think that the theory could even be wrong. And nevertheless, the theories stay intact. It's not necessarily science. It's more in the area of philosophy.
Yes. You basically have gone philosophical.
Yes.
You know, the thing is, it's interesting when you – one quote from their book I want to read here,
okay.
Stan. It says that we can expect that the increased study of evolution and development, coupled with genomic analysis, will provide more and more examples of the use of facilitated variations in specific evolutionary events. In other words – what they have here is an IOU in hand. The authors proclaim that the apparent weakness surrounding the novelty had been corrected. We showed that how intelligent design, at least how it appears intelligent, really isn't intelligent. And when we get some other people working on it, they should hopefully be able to figure out the weaknesses that we have in our theory and thus prove our novelty about novelty correct.
Something like, here's a theory, and we just know that somebody will eventually prove it.
Somebody will prove this. It just sounds too good not to be true.
We want it to be true.
Do you believe?
No. Have faith.
They want to basically tell you, though, that what they're sharing are facts. What they really have is they misunderstand. You know, it's interesting when you get into Kirshner and Gerhardt. Mm-hmm. Are arguing against intelligent designs. Uh-huh. Yet they really misunderstand intelligent design and its history. They want to say that all intelligent designers are closet creationists or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
The reality is not all of them are.
Yeah.
They are very wide range in beliefs and faith. Yeah. Some of them are just scientists who think that evolution, you know, is stupid.
Yep.
It's not deduced from religious doctrine. It's deduced from good science.
Mm-hmm.
And so they
refuse to believe that. And that's a typical challenge sent back whenever anybody even dares to challenge Darwin. The first thing out of the lips is, you're a closet creationist.
They call.
Yeah.
Ad hominem arguments and stuff. But there's you know, what they've learned, though, and here's a review of their book done by intelligent design person, Jonathan Wells, who referred to in previous things to Beagles, basically summed up a century of embryology that taught us taught us three things.
Yes.
That, you know, if you fiddle with these embryos, these mechanisms, you know, let's say a mouse embryo, three things could happen. A, you could have a mouse, a normal mouse that is hatched. B, you could have a deformed mouse. Or C, you will have a dead mouse, a stillbirth.
Okay.
And so really, despite all their embryonic playing around and speculating and goofing, they have never had a new species come out that could genetically reproduce or anything. Its nature goes back to what it was. And we have a torpedo tech we'd like to share.
Yes.
About this, you know, when science starts kind of like trying to play God.
Uh-huh.
And we have it in Romans, don't you there?
Romans chapter 1, and this is talking about in particular the Greek world of his day, the philosophers that Paul is writing about. He said, "For since the creation of the world is invisible, that is, God's invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became..." Here's the key. "Futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools."
And that's what I think that a lot of science is going towards, is it tries to purport things that just really don't add
it's
up,
really
make sense.
It's really silly, yeah.
It's pretty, they call it the plausibility of life. Yeah, it's a long shot. It might be plausible under their thing, but it's such a long shot that, you know, it's easier to believe and have faith that there was actually a God who intentionally created you, intentionally created me, made us for a purpose.
Absolutely. Otherwise, what have you left? If you are like these scientists, somebody who rejects the idea of the supernatural and God out of hand, then you're going to have to explain everything coming here by good old random chance. And you got to come up with theories like this. There's nothing else that even remotely sounds intelligent.
I think I want to grow another hand, Stan. I want to grow a third hand because I can always use that extra hand. You know.
Okay.
Where am I going to put it?
Top around my teenage son's.
My head so I can bop him when he's.
That's
I have
right.
A free hand when I'm carrying groceries to whop him.
A thumping hand.
No. Yeah. Thumping hand. Yeah. Thumping. No, the point is that God has made us, we're fearfully and wonderfully made.
Yes, we are.
And we have a designer who designed us for a relationship with himself. We hope that you'll discover that discover that it's easy when you follow God to facilitate major change in your life through the power of the Spirit.
Oh, absolutely.
And so tune in again to another
Sink the Beagle.
Here on Gilligan's Island.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.